Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Demonstrations in Gabon as regional bloc maintain sanctions against the country's military government.
An advisor to the ousted president's Gabonese Democratic Party says if Gabon's military respects its promise to hand power to civilian rule, sanctions imposed by the international community will be lifted.
Malawi's ban on maize imports forces WFP to grind grain from Tanzania. Kenyan President Ruto criticizes opponent Raila Odinga for his plan to resume protests. The new leader of the opposition in Uganda's parliament will continue to demand accountability and human rights.
It's important that we keep holding government accountable to make sure there's value for taxpayers' money, make sure there's accountability, make sure issues of corruption are dealt with, and also human rights issues.
And Turkey arrests alleged Israeli spies as Israel vows Hamas revenge. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Opposition and civil society groups are rallying in support of Gabon's coup leader. This after a bloc of Central African states refused to lift the sanctions that they imposed after the military ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba at the end of August. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports.
There were demonstrations this week in the Gabonese cities of Libreville, Oyem, and Franceville as civil society groups call for an end to sanctions, including Gabon's suspension from the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, and Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS. Gabon was suspended from the economic blocks on September 1, 2 days after General Brice Oligui Nguema ousted President Bongo in a bloodless coup. In a New Year's message, Oligui said he rescued Gabon from the iron-fisted rule of Bongo, restored political stability, and is improving delivery of water, electricity, and health care. He said most of Gabon's debts have been settled within his 4 months of rule. Opposition parties say the junta leader has also liberated scores of political prisoners, invited exiled opposition leaders and critics back to the country, and is fighting against corruption that characterized the Ali Bongo regime. They say he should be given time to organize elections and say the international sanctions should be lifted immediately. Jean-Delor Bitoge-Bi Ntougou is a political scientist and researcher at the Libreville headquartered Oma Bongo University.
On prive le Gabon d'une tribune au niveau international et on rend sa voix.
He says the sanctions deprive Gabon of expressing opinions on topical, local, regional, and international issues and render the Central African state's voice inaudible when countries meet during summits and conferences to discuss peace, security, the well-being of civilians, and international cooperation. He says Gabon, like any other nation, wants to take part in discussions that shape the future of the world. The military junta recently sent delegations to the United Nations, CEMAC, and ECAS member states to press for the lifting of the sanctions. Oligui said the coup was essential because it prevented bloodshed from Gabon's opposition, which said Bongo stole their victory in Gabon's August 26 election. In remarks to protesters, Oligui said he was surprised the diplomatic outreach didn't work. Nestor Obiang-Zoki, an expert in governance and development policy and an advisor to the ousted president's Gabonese Democratic Party, says if Gabon's military respects its promise to hand power to civilian rule, sanctions imposed by the international community will be lifted. Nzoge says Central Africa's leaders, who have clung to power for decades, are reluctant to lift sanctions on Gabon for fear of setting a precedent for military takeovers.
Nous avons aujourd'hui trois doyens dans la sous-région. Ces trois doyens, quand ils voient...
He says Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang-Nguema, who has ruled for about 45 years, Cameroon's President Paul Biya, who has been in power for 41 years, and Congo's Denis Sassou Nguesso, who has been president for about 40 years, may think that lifting sanctions and openly accepting General Oligui as Gabon's president can act as an encouragement for militaries in their countries to also seize power. In November, Gabon's military government announced a program to organize free, transparent, and credible elections to restore civilian rule by August 2025. The military leaders say before such elections, the sovereign people of Gabon will meet in a national dialogue in April 2024 to, among other things, adopt the transition plan. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
The new leader of the opposition in Uganda's parliament says those under his leadership will work with the speaker to do the people's business. However, Joel Senyonyi, who took over officially yesterday from Matthias Mpuuga, says the opposition will continue to demand accountability for human rights, especially when it comes to alleged missing opposition supporters. The opposition began its boycott of parliamentary proceedings in October to protest what they say is the government's failure to account for opposition supporters whom they alleged are being held by security forces. However, according to the Uganda Monitor, the government says it does not arrest people because of their political inclinations, but rather for suspicion of committing crimes. Senyonyi tells me that the issue of the alleged missing opposition members will continue to be part of the opposition's agenda under his leadership.
Yeah, so according to our laws, the principal role of the leader of the opposition in parliament is to keep the government in check. And that's done in various ways. Number one, when we pass money as parliament, how is it utilized? It's important that we keep holding government accountable to make sure there's value for taxpayers' money, make sure there's accountability, make sure issues of corruption are dealt with, but also human rights issues. That's another way to hold them accountable, because government is meant to safeguard the people. But many times you find people are being brutalized, many are still missing. So all these are issues that are going to be of serious concern to us, and we'll put great emphasis on them.
Your predecessor, yes, Mr. Mpuuga, was leading an opposition boycott of the parliament because of opposition supporters who they claim have been missing. Would that be part of your agenda?
Absolutely. You see, this is an issue that has not settled, because people were abducted and they have been missing all the while. The government has not given a satisfactory response. They've just been dismissive of this issue. And yet these people were abducted by state security. So that's something that we are not going to give up on, because everything starts and ends with human rights. Even as you're dealing with other issues, the budgetary process, all these laws that we keep passing and so on, we can't pass laws for people who are being killed, people who are being brutalized or disappeared and that kind of thing. So life importantly first.
You said the government has not paid attention, but I thought the government last November explained or provided answers to some of the issue about the missing opposition supporters.
The government has, you know, severally, whenever we ask them about this issue, they are dismissive. But you see, the prime minister of the country, Honorable Robin Anabadja, came out and said some of these missing people were arrested. And we have said, look, when you arrest somebody 4 years later, you've not produced them in any court of law, nobody knows their whereabouts, why are they operating like it's jungle law? We thought that we are in the 21st century, for heaven's sake. So that is why we are insisting to say those people must be produced. If they think they have committed any offense, produce them in a court of law. As simple as that.
Of course, there are some issues of national and international concern. Recently, you know that your country was delisted on the U.S. AGOA. There's also the issue of the LGBTQ law. Where is the opposition? Let's take first the AGOA issue.
You see, maybe it's even good that a time comes and Uganda gets to be cut off from some of, you know, the aid we keep relying on. Maybe it's time we wake up, you know, it's time we cease to say, you see, yes, because of a law that was passed, now why are you, you know, cutting off our aid, we're a sovereign country and so on. Let's grow up financially, okay? Let's begin to take good care of our financial well-being, make sure there's value for this taxpayer's money, make sure the money is not stolen. You know, this crying around that I see from government officials and so on is unwarranted because they're the same guys that keep stealing this money. So put that money to proper use and you don't have to go crying around.
So the Speaker of Parliament has said that she's available and willing to work with the opposition, but on the intellectual matter, but not what she calls flexing of muscles. Are you willing to work with her?
Well, we're always flexing our brains, and that's something we are not going to stop doing, okay? You've not seen us flexing muscles. In fact, even in the previous parliament, where the Bobi Wines were and the others, they were doing that in self-defense when the military raided parliament. So in parliament, we go for intellectual discourse. So we are going to flex our brains. We are going to flex our thought and intellect. We hope that the government will match up to us because many times they don't.
Yoel Senyonyi is the new opposition leader in Uganda's parliament. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. President William Ruto has criticized the call by the leader of the opposition, Azimio La Umoja, to revive demonstrations, emphasizing that the approach will lead to destruction and chaos rather than providing solutions. Local media report that Ruto last week urged the opposition to present their alternative solutions for the development of the country instead of resorting to protests and disorder. This follows recent concerns expressed by Odinga regarding ongoing tax increases and the need to repeal the Finance Act. Odinga warned that without necessary action, demonstrations may resume like the ones he held earlier last year before he reached a truce with the president and called them off. Political analyst David Monda tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that the opposition is trying to put pressure on the government to do something about the cost of living.
I think it's a game of cat and mouse, as usual in Kenya, between the opposition and the government. So I think that the opposition is trying to put pressure on the government to do something on the cost of living, and the government on its part does not want to seem to be weak and giving in to opposition demands. However, let's not forget the opposition has members of parliament in parliament. So there's a lot they can do in terms of stabilizing the economy. Measures like reducing taxes through legislative bills that become acts of parliament, but also in terms of checking the government and the excesses of government fraud and waste. So there's a lot that can be done by the opposition. But I also think the government needs to have more openness in terms of how it implements some of this economic policy, because the current government policy doesn't seem to be growing the economy fast enough to reduce the cost of living, specifically around these cartels that are artificially inflating the prices of crude oil imports coming into Mombasa to be distributed to Kenya and to the rest of the region.
Politics and economy aside, Kenya has been known for having an independent judiciary. And that there seems to be a collision course between the judiciary and President Ruto. What do you make of that clash?
I think it's a very unfortunate clash because as much as the executive in the shape of President Ruto has his citizen rights to speak about corruption in the judiciary or what he perceives to be corruption in the judiciary, but we know that within the framework of separation of powers of how the executive is not supposed to interfere with the judiciary, and the judiciary is not supposed to interfere with the legislature or the executive. I think his comments really come in a bad taste because they throw us back to the old eras in the 80s and 90s when presidents used to deliberately attack members of the judiciary who made legal decisions that the president didn't like. And they also filled the courts with a lot of judges who were compromised. A lot of our past presidents in Kenya have tended to do that, fill courts with judges who are compromised. So I think these statements really, when you add them with that history of executive interference into the judiciary, really do not bode well for the independence of the judiciary and for the judiciary to actually fix some of the problems it might have within itself, by itself, separate from interference by the executive.
That was David Monda, a professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke from Johannesburg, South Africa, with viewers Douglas Mpuga. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Buckley in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 11th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Despite ongoing food shortages, the government of Malawi last month banned the import of unmilled maize from Kenya and Tanzania, citing concerns about the spread of maize lethal necrosis disease, or MLN. To help keep Malawians fed, the World Food Program has started mailing 30,000 metric tons of relief maize. Authorities say the first consignment of the milled grain is expected next week. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Ironically, the maize the WFP purchased for milling is from Tanzania. The grain was held up last week, awaiting the arrival of experts to test it for maize lethal necrosis disease. However, the WFP country director in Malawi, Paul Turnbull, told local media that in the interests of time, it was agreed that no tests would be done, and instead the WFP would just mill the maize and import flour to Malawi. Charles Galemba is the commissioner for Malawi's Department of Disaster Management Affairs. He told the state broadcaster Tuesday importing flour is safe.
We are getting maize flour from Tanzania because the Minister of Agriculture did not say we cannot get maize, but what we call full-grain maize, which can be planted. That's where the problem is. But getting maize for food in the form of maize flour, that's okay.
In December, the Malawi government banned the import of unmilled maize grain from Kenya and Tanzania because of concerns that the spread of maize lethal necrosis disease would wipe out the country's staple crop. The Minister of Agriculture said the disease has no treatment and can cause up to 100% yield loss. Ronald Chirumpa is an expert in crop protection in Malawi. He told VOA he did not expect Malawi to ban maize grain from Tanzania.
Maize necrosis has been there in East Africa since 2012, and Malawi has been on alert for potential presence of that disease in the country. I do believe that these are scientific issues that can be discussed from a scientific point of view and come to a consensus.
Authorities in Malawi estimated that 4.4 million people, about a quarter of Malawi's population, will face food shortages over the next 3 months. The food shortages are largely because of the impact of Cyclone Freddy, which washed away thousands of hectares of crops near a year ago. Government statistics show that maize stocks in the national strategic reserves have dropped to 68,000 metric tons, 100,000 less than required to adequately address hunger in the Southern African nation. WFP Regional Director for Southern Africa, Megasta Buhari, met with Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera Tuesday. He told reporters that several other African countries are also facing a hunger situation.
The problem of insecurity is not only in Malawi. The whole region is looking at a crisis. We don't know what El Nino is going to do. So what we are, as WFP, are doing is supporting the government in every way possible to make sure that we have the necessary resources mobilized and distributed to the people who deserve those resources.
In the meantime, the Malawi government has announced that it will import unmilled maize grain from South Africa. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Turkey this month has arrested dozens of people accused of spying for Israel. The highly publicized arrests are seen as a warning to Israel to desist from targeting Palestinians in Turkey after Israel warned it would target anyone involved in the October 7 attack. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkish authorities raided dozens of homes in early January in a major operation targeting alleged spy rings run by Israel's Mossad intelligence service. The raid came after Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warned of serious consequences should Israel try to hunt down members of the Palestinian militant group Hamas in Turkey. Murat Aslan is a senior analyst for the Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research, an Ankara think tank.
It's very clear from the threats of Israelis that Turkey is selected as a venue for attacks on Hamas. In this case, then, Turkish intelligence, at the very first instance, and by the words of President, warned Israeli intelligence in Ankara that there must be no act. But right after this warning, it was a political warning, intelligence organization identified, activated cells of Mossad in Turkey.
Israel has not commented on the arrests, but Israeli military leaders and government ministers are vowing to track down those involved in Hamas's October 7 attack on Israel, wherever they reside. With Erdogan, a strong supporter of Hamas, often describing it as a liberation movement, analysts say Turkey is seen as a likely location for Israel to hunt down anyone who played a role in the October 7 attacks. Galia Lindenstrauss is an analyst with the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
When we see the massacres of October 7th, how they occurred and how well they were planned, obviously there was a lot of assistance also from the outside and a lot of things that were coming from outside of Gaza into Gaza. Some of this obviously came through Turkey, not by the Turkish government, but by the Turkish government or Turkish security authorities not paying enough attention to what was happening.
It's not the first time Turkey's MIT intelligence agency has clashed with Israel's Mossad, but the two formidable intelligence services also recently cooperated in foiling an Iranian plot against Israelis, explains Galia Lindenstrauss of the Institute for National Security Studies in Tel Aviv.
We definitely did see good cooperation between Mossad and MIT, and there was a foiling of a supposedly imminent attack against Israelis on Turkish soil in 2022. So these organizations also know to cooperate. I think they have great respect to each other.
In December, Turkish authorities arrested alleged Islamic State members accused of planning attacks on synagogues. As the war in Gaza continues, experts say Ankara is determined to prevent the conflict from coming to Turkey. Murat Aslan for the Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research, an Ankara think tank.
Turkey does not want to be a playground for the intelligence organizations. So that's why I think Turkish intelligence increased the activity to identify exactly who is involved in what activity.
Turkey has witnessed terror attacks and assassinations in the past, dealing a heavy blow to tourism and the wider economy. Observers say Ankara is determined that the Middle East war won't come to the streets of Turkey. Doreen Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
And that's it for this Thursday, January 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, saying, have a great day and please be safe, whatever you do.
Around the clock, the Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-Minute VOA Newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA, your trusted source for